Good day, everybody. This is the Daily Observations Podcast. It is Tuesday, the 9th of June. This is 2020. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Good morning.
Okay. Also with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Good morning. Good morning.
It's great to stay up late. Good morning. Good morning to you and you and you.
Hello and welcome to the Mac Observer Musical Observations Podcast. I mean, hello. My name is... never mind. Okay. We're going to start today with a very interesting bit of news that we've received from a few different places. It looks like Bloomberg has broken the story that... we are going to get an announcement at WWDC, which is later this month, June 22nd, that A14 processors, which are going to be the processor, the A-series processor is what's already in Apple's mobile devices, the iPad and the iPhone, and they have riffed on the A14 processor to create processors that are going to go into Macs. And the reason that they're announcing this at WWDC is so the developers have a chance to learn about this and find out more and start to gear up for that transition, which is supposed to happen next year. We've gone around about this a few times, but this seems to be a little bit meatier than the normal, "No, really, guys, we mean it this time," that we kind of get that goes along with this sort of thing. So to start with, John, I wanted to go with you. I wanted to go to you and talk about what Apple's processors look like in the Macs. There's really only sort of two categories at this point, but I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the history of that so far.
Yeah, the Mark Gurman wrote an article at Bloomberg outlining the supposed solid source on this and had provided us with a little history. And reminded us that Apple has changed processors on the Mac twice in its 36 history. The first time the Mac came out was in 1984 with a 32-bit Motorola 68000, which we all thought was so sexy. Turns out to be not so great a chip anymore, but boy, at the time, it was a head and shoulders improvement over the MOS Technology 6502 that was in the Apple II, which is an 8-bit processor, and the 68000 had a whole bunch of 32-bit registers, and it was glorious. Then,
so that processor, just to give people a landmark, that processor is when people sort of think of the one piece Mac, like the 2FX and the SE and the classic, the little unit with the built in screen from back in the day, like when you see an icon. That's supposed to be a little Mac. It's that. That's the computer we're talking about.
Right. And then an alliance was formed between Apple, IBM, and Motorola in the early 90s. And they switched to the PowerPC architecture, which IBM promised was going to be really, really great. And went with that for a few years. And then there was I remember it might have been a WWDC. Maybe around 2000 when IBM announced they were going to be ramping up the clock speed, and Steve Jobs made an announcement following IBM's boast, and IBM failed to deliver increasing clock speeds on the power PCs. And just in my recollection, Steve got a little annoyed and decided to switch over to Intel. That happened in 2005. And most of us were alive at the time to remember that, except Charlotte Henry.
Well, she was alive, too, but she wasn't alive for the 68K.
Yeah. She was alive for Intel. Yeah.
And that transition went fairly well. We went through that. We had the Rosetta emulator where we were able to run PowerPC apps in fat binary mode, where we could load a fat binary and run it on either our PowerPC Mac or our Intel Mac. And eventually we got away from Rosetta and PowerPC apps altogether.
Honestly, now, the harder transition was going from old school Mac OS to Mac OS X. Like, that felt like a thing. The software transition felt like something that was a much harder gap to bridge than what the processor switches were. Because I remember going PowerPC, which was fine. for the most part. And I remember going to Intel hardware-wise, which was fine for the most part. You know, it seemed like the biggest disruption as an end user, the biggest disruption for me was OS 9 to OS 10.
There was a time around 1998 or 99 when the very early versions of Mac OS 10 were called Rhapsody.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
And I had it running on a Power Mac 8500, and it was very crude. And it had all sorts of concessions and compromises, and it was ugly and awful and hard to install and didn't work very well and didn't have any. And there was this yellow box syndrome where the next engineers were trying to get their way, and cooler heads prevailed and said, no, it's going to look like a Mac. And they pummeled and worked and finally got it into shape. I mean, it didn't even have a menu bar in the first version. So finally, by the time the public beta came out in October 2000, it was starting to look like a Mac. But boy, those were difficult years from 98 to 2000.
I bet. This does not surprise me in the least. Brian, what's your take on this being the big announcement at Dub this year?
Very exciting. I've been expecting it for a long time. One of the things that Mr. German reports in his article is that Apple found performance gains. Specifically, I'm quoting let me quote here: inside Apple tests of new Macs with the ARM-based chips have shown sizable improvements over Intel-powered versions, specifically in graphics performance and apps using artificial intelligence. The people said Apple's processors are more power efficient than Intel's, which may mean thinner and lighter Mac laptops in the future. Now, that said, he also said this would be the first time Apple has used Apple design processors in its Mac line. Technically, the PowerPC platform as a whole had Apple as a co-designer. It was called the AIM Consortium, Apple, IBM, and Motorola. And Apple was very involved in designing the platform. But you could say that he's technically correct from the standpoint of IBM and Motorola were doing their own implementations of the AIM architecture.
Right. But I think this is the first time that they've been manufactured by Apple at a minimum.
Yes.
Well, first time they've this.
Apple didn't make any of the AIM chips, Brian.
They didn't make any of the AIM chips, but Apple was a co-designer in the AIM platform, the architecture.
Yes.
So but it's technically correct, but I do think that caveat is kind of important.
It makes a big difference,
but
I think.
That's too, mainly because I'm kind of a, you know, pedanter.
You know what, Brian, what stuck out to me in the article, or the biggest line in the article for me, a big question was answered. The company plans to eventually transition the entire lineup to its ARM-based processors, including the priciest desktop computers, the source said. I've been wondering about that.
We have been. I thought that one of the things that Apple might have been delaying the Mac Pro redesign going back a couple of years ago was maybe Apple was waiting for its ARM processors and it would actually launch this Mac Pro with an ARM processor. Clearly, I was wrong about that. But I don't see any reason why Apple can't throw enough cores of its own processors at a Mac to make it outperform Intel.
So there's a couple things here. First of all, you know, Brian, you mentioned that you thought this might have been what was delaying the Mac Pro. I wonder if that's why we've sort of gotten press release updates to the rest of the hardwares, because they were, you know, well, the 16-inch MacBook, you know, the Mac Pro wasn't it. We think the 16, we're going to make a 16-inch MacBook Pro. Maybe that'll be the ARM, but no. And so I wonder if that's why some of these have become, I mean, I realize in the last couple of months they're out of necessity, but a laptop with a new processor would be worth an event. And I wonder if that's part of why we've sort of gotten these incremental updates, is because they were supposed to be ARM and they're not. And so we're just sort of getting something else instead.
Yeah, to your what I think is your point, I think we can probably expect some new industrial design to accompany the rollouts of ARM-based Macs, probably across the whole product line. Maybe not with the Mac Pro. There's no reason for Apple to actually redesign that.
The redesign, yeah.
Yeah. No, yes. Exactly. And but for sure that could happen. It seems like that would be a good thing to happen.
I definitely like the idea of refreshing the design behind them as well.
Sure.
In by virtue of, you know, having them look a little different, or, you know, maybe they're a different size, you know, because maybe now what takes up the space of a 13-inch laptop, you know, they get rid of all the bezel like they did on the 16s, right? And now we have 14-inch. So it's the, you know, the 14-inch MacBook Pro is, you know, the standard issue machine from now on, or something like that. And I think that's kind of interesting. But
Mr. German also reported that these processors will be 5-nanometer processors, which is just mind-boggling. John, do you happen to recall what Intel's current is? Like, are they still in 14?
I believe the Ice Lake that they're using is 10 nanometers. I could be wrong, but I think it is 10.
Okay.
Well, let's find out. Ice Lake size. 11. Oh, maybe misreading that.
11 was stuck in my head because the 10 John's wasn't right. Reliable or something, but I can't swear to that.
John's right. It's 10 nanometer. So okay. But 5-nanometer is just, I mean, we're just talking about, like, you know, like theoretical limits of the physics involved in making processors. We're getting really close to that.
When we give that size, when we say a 5-nanometer process, what we're talking about is the size of the major artifacts on the die, the traces and the transistors. One way to think of it is the size of the transistor if you drew a circle around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. And 5-nanometers is really small. It's just really small.
That circle is a dot.
Yeah, way to most people's eyeballs. Light is 500 nanometers.
Yeah, that helps everybody, John. Now everybody's like,
oh, well, I had no idea until you told me that.
Light. Of course. Green light. Now we have reference. <Yeah.
laughs> I get it now. It's a hundredth of green light. Yeah, why didn't you just say? Anyway, it's insanely small. It's really cool. Actually, literally, it'll use less power and produce less heat because it's so small. And it's Macs and iPhones and iPads are just going to be fast, and I can't wait for this transition.
I'm excited too. I'm excited about a new physical design too. I think that will add some spice to the situation and sort of create a badge of honor for the new line of ARM-based Macs. I would be very surprised if Apple didn't radically change the coolness and the thinness and the design of their MacBooks.
Okay, so let me see if I can give people a little bit better scale. This is still basically theoretical, but a human hair, like hair off the top of your head, if you have it, is between 80 and 100,000 nanometers. And the processor we're talking about is 5. Not 5,000, really just small. 5. So there's some scale.
Like quantum unexpected quantum effects when trying to make these processors. I think they were talking about that when they were like 9 nanometers.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
there was something wrong with getting them down to 9 nanometers or something.
It's got some serious physics magic going on by TSMC. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's, there's some cool things going on with this. So that's fantastic. I can't wait. Like I said, it's going to be super exciting.
Now, one of the things that people are worried about is being able to run Windows on their ARM-based Macs. Mm-hmm. And recently, when I interviewed Victor Fiss, Parallels Director of Sales Engineers, on Background Mode, that was the May 26th episode. At the very end of the show, I popped a question on him. I said something like, if Apple were to go to ARM-based Macs, would that be a giant headache for Parallels? And after a brief pause, he said, nope. which was comforting to hear, and that he actually made a commitment to answer the question, yes or no.
Mm-hmm. Well, that pause was because of the way you asked it. I mean, like,
I know
he was parsing the way you asked it.
Yes, exactly.
What can I and say?
He was
here?
Deciding whether or not he could answer. He wasn't trying to. Yes. He wasn't trying to figure out the answer. He's trying to figure out.
Please, that his politics and his sensibilities and what he could allow to tell me, all at the same time converged to a pleasing answer. Well, he could have said, I couldn't answer that right now.
There is a version of Windows that runs on ARM. And I'm sure that Microsoft is going to be, you know, we're talking to 2021 for this release for Apple?
That's what the reporting is, yeah.
That's what the reporting is. Apple, of course, hasn't announced this. And even the reporting says that time frame could change based on, you know, various other factors. My point is that you can be darn sure that Microsoft is going to make sure that a version of Windows can run on these Macs, because Microsoft is very good about things like that, especially under Satya Nadella.
Mm-hmm. I think it'll be interesting. What I have noticed in this is what I remember from... back in the day, basically, was when Apple started being, I don't know how public it was, but publicly dissatisfied with the development they were getting. So we went from the 68K chip to the Power Mac chip, so like the G chips and, you know, the old school Mac towers, that sort of thing, like the G4. You know, the G3, the G4, there was a G5 tower. Everybody kept waiting for the G5 PowerBook that never happened. I remember part of that being Apple being unhappy with development and speed improvements and evolution of the processors over time. And that was why we ended up going Intel in the first place. And now Apple is unhappy with the performance and the evolution they're getting out of those chips. And so they're doing something different again. And I think it's really interesting that Apple is continuing to sort of push that, like, we don't have forever to wait around for, in this case, Intel to get it together. We didn't have time before to wait around for Motorola and IBM to get it together. So they've made these changes over time. And to me, that's the part that's interesting, is Apple is still looking to get more power, more performance, more oomph out of these. Sorry to get technical there. Than what they're getting with what's currently available. And they're looking for an avenue to do that.
And the timing and a roadmap and reliable manufacturing availability and integration on Apple's schedule with its CPUs and its motherboard, instead of waiting for Motorola or, I'm sorry, Intel to ship.
Yeah.
I see what you did there, John.
Very nice. That's the part to me that's sort of interesting, is that, you know, we've kind of, it's not like there's a plateau, but like, if you go buy a new computer today, that computer is reasonably fast and it will remain reasonably fast for a long time to come. And you're not going to see dramatically faster processors a year from now. Like that, you know, Moore's law has continued to extend out, you know, and still Apple is kind of going, we need more, we desire more performance than we're getting. We desire, you know, better manufacturing, faster turnaround, more reliable manufacturing, whatever it is.
Hold on. Apple just also wants to control this stuff. Apple has proven that when it's designing its own processors in iPhones and iPads, that it can make a better device, that they can control more of the things that are important to them and get especially increased battery life, as well as specific kinds of calculations for specific kinds of applications. And in this particular case, I mean applications as in tasks versus applications as in programs,
right?
And software. And this like, we want more power. That's an excuse for Apple.
Oh, okay.
Do we talk about Catalyst, Brian?
Sure.
Why not? Specter of having iPad apps running on your MacBook and touching the screen.
John looks forward to your letters.
maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe we're going to get that toaster fridge.
Yeah.
Maybe.
All right. I have to tell you, there is a Windows iteration of one of those at my house. It's a long story. And it is the weirdest, most ridiculous thing to stick your hands on your laptop screen. I can't do it. It's weird. It's absolutely incorrect. I hate it. I have an iPad if I want a nice big screen that I can go touch and drag things around with my fingers.
Yeah, I know
it's
people
the weirdest thing.
I know people who use those things that love them.
Yeah. This is a, I think a Dell, one of those ones that bends around and turns into a tablet. I hope I'm pronouncing those air quotes correctly. Yeah, it's weird. It's very weird, and it's a very inconsistent experience, which is part of why sticking your fingers on your MacBook screen doesn't have any appeal to me at all, is because it feels like the wrong experience to me. So we'll save that for another show, though. Maybe once we actually get this announcement and we've got more to chew on, we will do that. You can, as usual, expect as much coverage as we can get our hands on of WWDC when that starts on June 22nd, in a couple of weeks. So until then, I would like to thank all of you for being here. John, as always, thank you for coming by when we talk processors. You know I love it.
Hey, my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So glad. And as always, including your hat, Brian, I'd like to thank both of you for being here today.
We are both happy to be with you.
That's going to do it for us. I'm your host, Kelly Gamano. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other. Go watch the Bill and Ted 3 trailer, and let's be careful out there.